The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Today on the Town Hall Review, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, I asked a simple question. One reporter did not like it.
You're trying to, set the bar. You're trying to move the goalposts. You're trying to distract from facts that are out there.
We will examine Donald Trump's relationship with the media.
What people don't realize is that he does have a pretty good relationship with a lot of reporters. He actually does want to speak to reporters, does care what they think.
We'll take a look at the harassment of conservatives.
Now that's hideous. There's no other way to describe that other than hideous.
And how do you justify some forms of racism? Make up a new definition.
Racism, being racist, is not just prejudice. It's prejudice plus power.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live 6 to 9 a.m. East Coast and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. The Russia investigation has taken on a life of its own. If your primary news source is your Twitter feed, and for far too many, that's it, you might be under the impression that Putin is controlling the president. Headlines from major news outlets imply there's a dangerous connection between the two. Some of those titles might be clickbait, but many don't click and are left with a misleading impression. Then a Trump tweet over the weekend gave them more fuel. The president admitted that a meeting that everyone already knew about included talk already known about of dirt on a political opponent that was being collected by, yes, the president's son. So I asked the question of Mike Allen, co-founder, executive editor of Axios. He's a seasoned political reporter whom I like and respect a great deal. And while many experienced political writers openly acknowledge the issue, Mike Allen's response was extraordinary. Here's our conversation on the Hugh Hewitt Show. People in Washington, D.C., you talk to both sides, you do your reporting. Does any serious public official believe that the Russians control the president?
I can't speak for all serious election officials. I think that that is a pretty extreme thing for you to say to you, and I would caution you against making that declaration.
I don't believe it, but I wonder, does anyone believe it?
You are introducing an idea that no one talks about, that people don't believe, and you're trying to put that idea out there. And
I am suggesting the innuendo in the media is that the president is controlled by the Russians. That, to me, is the clear innuendo of people who talk about collusion.
Just so it's obvious what you're doing, you're trying to set a bar. You're trying to move the goalposts. You're trying to distract from facts that are out there to say something that no one's saying. And it's fine for you to do that, but I just want to be clear what you're doing.
I'm trying to actually cut through the innuendo and the noise to what drives the president crazy is the idea that, quote, compromat, close quote, is being used to control the president. And I think it's absurd, and I think you think it's absurd. And I think when people...
You don't think it's absurd to you because you keep putting that idea out there that this is an idea that you're introducing, that you're putting in people's minds. And I would just caution your listeners to stick to facts, not to stick to...
No, but this is important. I believe the whole media narrative is designed to create a murmur about the president, that he is a Manchurian president, that the Russians have kompromat, that he's too easy on Vladimir Putin, and that he is somehow controlled by the Russians, that there were Russians involved in his campaign. And so all this talk about one tweet, he knew about the meeting. What are we supposed to draw from that if he knew about the meeting? What's the innuendo, Mike?
All right. Well, let's talk about reality. And the reality is the president in the tweet that you're talking about made the point that this Trump Tower meeting was about political oppo. And this is something that all of the president's people had denied at first. And so this is a consequential change, a consequential admission. And what's interesting about this, Hugh, is it makes it harder for the president's attorneys to argue that he doesn't know anything about this. Now, he says in the tweet, he didn't know before. But if you're a Trump lawyer, like, you're a good lawyer, you'd never advise a client to go out and say this. A funny tweet from Michael Barbaro of the New York Times of the Daily. He said that this president just says things that to get out of another president would be a lot of work. So what's interesting to you is the people close to the president think that he will wind up doing an interview with Mueller. They think that he wants to. He thinks he makes the best case for himself. And as one associate said to me, he just can't help himself.
And I think that's crazy for him to do. But I want to go back. Why is that tweet consequential? That's what I'm driving at. I think it got so much play, not because of what it says, because everybody knows that that meeting was about opposition research. I mean, if there isn't anyone who follows this story, doesn't realize you had read the Don Jr. email trail that was put out. He met with the Russians because he thought they had dirt. It was an oppo dump collect. It turned out to be a false flag, a head fake. They wanted to try and get the Magnitsky Act repealed. Everybody knows that. So why is it consequential when the president states what everybody knows?
If everybody knows that certainly is not what, quote, everybody was saying. You remind me of my mother when we'd say, everybody's going to Mexico for spring break. Why can't we go? I think that if you look at the statements that were made by the administration, if you look at the statements that were made by the president from day one, this is not what they said.
All right. Let me try one more time. The Washington Post is publishing a book today by Greg Miller, The Apprentice, Trump, Russia, and the Subversion of American Democracy. That goes to my first question. It is exactly what the media narrative is. Greg's on Morning Joe right now. You can't put out a book that says The Apprentice, Trump, Russia, and the Subversion of American Democracy, and pretend that the left is not trying to suggest that the president is run by Russia.
I will mark down this day as the day that Hewitt said that the Washington Post, like whatever they say, he agrees with, and that the Washington Post is his exhibit A.
But I don't agree with it. I'm pointing out to a concerted effort. I mean, it's truly mind-boggling that anyone would believe this, much less put out a book, The Apprentice, Trump, Russia, and the Subversion of American Democracy. Do you believe he's subverting American democracy?
I'm here to report, not here to engage in your fantasies.
Go to HughHewitt.com for the entire conversation. Amy Parnes, White House correspondent for The Hill, has been following the Russia-Trump story closely. She also joined me on The Hugh Hewitt Show. I think the innuendo in the media that is driving the president nuts is that he is somehow either working directly for Putin or compromised by him. I believe that is the under. Is that a fair assessment of the innuendo out there?
I think so. I think it started because he feels like he was elected, and there will always be an asterisk by his name, that he wasn't elected properly, that there's always going to be some kind of mystery behind it. Like, was he really elected? And I think that bothers him to his core, you know, and that's why he's always talking about Hillary Clinton and always talking about Obama and why he didn't do anything. And so I think that's kind of where it starts, but I do think you're right. I think it evolves into that thinking.
And Greg Warren at the Washington Post has a new book out called The Apprentice, and there's a story in it that says he acts like the apprentice to Putin. Amy, is this fair? Is there any evidence at all on the record that the president is working for Putin?
Well, I think there's all this commentary about how he is nice to Putin and he's not nice to anyone else, but he is gracious and, you know, offers pleasantries. And so I think a lot of people are saying, well, why isn't he like that with other people? Why is it Putin and why is it just Kim in North Korea? So I think that has perplexed a lot of people. And that's sort of why people think that he is kind of a puppet to Putin. And, you know, I don't think he made it any better when he went into that meeting without anyone else there, without, you know, there's still not record of what was said or what happened. And so that's concerning to a lot of people.
Being a puppet is a very serious charge that implies control. Like Alger Hiss was controlled by Moscow, like the Rosenbergs were, like this chauffeur that Dianne Feinstein had for 20 years. Does anyone seriously believe that?
I think a lot of people do. It depends on who you ask. I mean, Hugh, I'm sure you hear from Republicans all the time who think that meeting was a little suspect, right?
You know, I know most of these people, you know, and they I know Mike Pompeo. I know Tom Cotton. Nobody believes this. And by the way, this is what's so absurd to me. The idea that John Bolton, Mike Pompeo and Jim Mattis would work for someone that they actually thought was compromised by the Russians is so over the top that I'm astonished that people entertain it. But then John Podhoretz tells me, absolutely, millions of people believe it. But Mike Allen gets mad at me for even introducing it. And I'm just trying to state the obvious. This is what's driving the wedge between the president and the media. It's the the Democrats accusing the Republicans of working for the Russians.
Well, the thing is that it hasn't gotten better. And I think a lot of people, a lot of my colleagues in particular, have wanted the president to sort of back down on the hostility because they fear for their job, their lives. And, you know, it's not great when you're out there doing your work and people are screaming and cursing at you. So I think that's disconcerting to a lot of people. I think the tension has gone to an all new high, and I don't think it's going to get any better is the thing.
The weirdest thing before this all got started, when I was sitting down with a person with whom I was going to work on the debates, I don't know Trump. I've never been in a room alone with Trump. I've had like 5 seconds of conversation. But the president was told to me by one of the people that was going to put on the debates to be wonderful, avuncular, lovely in private, great person to play golf with. I don't think he has any personal hostility to any particular reporter, with the possible exception of Acosta, and generally just uses them as a foil in the way that insult comics use the crowd.
Yeah, it works in a lot of ways, and a lot of people think it's an effective strategy. It rallies the base, but the problem is that, you know, it is a little troubling. And, you know, what people don't realize is that he does have a pretty good relationship with a lot of reporters. He does kind of invite them into the Oval Office. He calls Maggie Lieberman a lot. He does this publicly, but, you know, privately, he actually does want to speak to reporters, does care what they think. And that's sort of been hidden in all this, you know, that, you know, he thinks, a lot of people think he hates the press, but I think he's always sort of had to work with the press and deal with the press and understand how the press works.
He loves the press. He's a New Yorker developer who needed the press to get what he wanted. But what is driving him crazy is the insinuation that he's a puppet, or that this tape exists, or that all that. At the same time, we're dealing, Amy, with an environment in which a guy tried to kill every Republican member of Congress at a softball field, and where people are getting thrown out of restaurants. And I do think that there are crazies on the right as well. The only talk radio host ever killed in America was killed by a right-wing nut in Denver, right, who came down from the mountains to shoot him. This is a weird environment in which not to be careful about how you calibrate your rhetoric.
And that's the thing, is that, and we talked about this recently when I was on your show, everyone is sort of in their own silos and watching what they want to watch, and there's no room for discussion anymore and for, you know, no room for convincing anyone for how someone should feel. Or everyone is very set in their ways, and I think it's only going to get worse as we get into 2020. You know, I can't see him rolling back any of this publicly, and I think Democrats in the same way are going to keep on, you know, thinking that he is Putin's puppet and applying pressure there. And so I don't think this is a win-win for anyone.
Our program is coming in today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Coming up, a look at the call to harass conservatives.
Now that's hideous. There's no other way to describe that other than hideous.
Stay with us. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Brought to you in partnership with our friends at ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. One great attribute for our country is the understood right to believe as you wish and to speak as you believe. But there are those who now insist that this is no longer a right. Their numbers are growing. Some are in powerful places like the United States Congress. Conservatives are most often the victims of this vitriol. More and more, they are being shouted out of public places. A number of times in the past month, they've even been forced out of restaurants by left-wing activists who threaten and scream at those with whom they disagree. The latest episode came at the expense of conservatives Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk. Salem host Mike Gallagher looks at the growing trend.
The shaming and the assault that Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk experienced at a restaurant, which is reminiscent of what Sarah Sanders went through and Kirsten Nielsen went through and Scott Pruitt. This is Maxine Waters America. It's what she wants. She stood there and said it. And make no mistake, Maxine Waters is one of the most prominent faces of the Democratic Party. And there's never been any back. There's never been any walking back what she said that sort of erupted around the country.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
Now that's hideous. There's no other way to describe that other than hideous. But that's, so what happened to Charlie Kirk and Candace Owens is what Maxine Waters wants to see. Get in conservative faces. Harass them. Harangue them. Shame them. They're not welcome anywhere. That's why the owner of a restaurant would feel perfectly comfortable with telling Sarah Sanders, get out of my restaurant. And then run across the street where the Sanders party went to try to escape that. And then follow them across the street. That's the part of the story that is always left out, to harass them and protest them at the other restaurant. Wasn't enough just to kick them out of the Red Hen. Kirstjen Nielsen, you've seen the video, sitting there with an aide in a restaurant and some shrill freak show screaming at her, shame, shame. There is an answer. It's in the primaries that we're going to continue to see. It's in the midterm elections in November. That's the answer. There is a political solution to this. There is a real-world solution to this. We can be frustrated at these fascist Antifa protesters, these scary, violent people. But you go up to somebody outside a restaurant, you dump a bottle of water. I think of Eric Hansen, my operations director, who's been with me for a lot of years. But he studies and practices martial arts. If somebody went up to him and dumped a bottle of water or liquid on his head, it would be very difficult for me to envision Eric just standing there and taking it. Most people wouldn't do that. Most people would fight. Most people would defend themselves. Now, Charlie Kirk, in his case, he's a prominent, high-profile young conservative, and he knew all the cameras were rolling. And if he hit the lady or the man or whoever it is that, I shouldn't call her a lady, the woman who dumped the liquid on him, just like somebody dumped liquid on Tommy Lahren's head on the top of a restaurant in Minneapolis. How shameful. What an embarrassing reflection of any restaurant or establishment or even a community where somebody would dump liquid on a young girl's head because you don't like her politics or you don't like what she represents on TV or whatever. Listen, there is an answer. You got to vote. If you're in Michigan, you got to vote. If you're in Missouri, you got to vote. If you're in Kansas, you got to vote. And you can decide. Do you want the Maxine Waters America? I don't hear any Republican urging their supporters to harass and harangue and antagonize and get in the faces of political opponents.
The New York Times hired a writer with a Twitter feed full of racist tweets. Sarah Jeong was named to the editorial board at the Times, which led to some natural scrutiny. It didn't take much to uncover tweets that revealed her hatred of what she calls, quote, the old white men, close quote, and police, among other groups. While some have been fired for far less, the Times defended Jeong. And many conservatives, some of whom she had directly attacked, came to her defense, saying these are not firing offenses. Salem host Larry Elder looked at the controversy.
The New York Times is probably the most important newspaper in the country. They've just hired a tech writer for their editorial board. She's 30 years old. Her name is Sarah Jeong, J-E-O-N-G. She's originally from South Korea. And she tweeted in 2014, 2015, the following tweets. And this is not an inclusive. This is just some of them. Dumb, blank, effing white people marking up the internet with their opinions like dogs blanking on fire hydrants. Quote, oh man, it's kind of sick how much joy I get from being cruel to old white men. Close quote. She had a series of anti-police tweets, including F the police many, many times. She even said F white women, LOL. Kill more men in 2014, she tweeted. If only bad men were killed, that would still include all men, she said. Simone Sanders is a CNN pundit, and she said she's not racist, nor is she even a bigot, and she explains why.
No, I don't think Sarah's tweets are racist. Look, first of all, I think that it's important to note that these tweets were dug up by a right wing. It's not even conservative. It was a right wingers, people that identify with the white supremacist ideology, and they were taken out of context. Now, that being said, I subscribe to the notion that I don't tweet, write, or email anything that I don't want splashed across the pages of the New York Times.
Does it matter who dug them up?
I think it matters that it's selective. That's what I'm saying. And so some of the tweets are taken out of context. I think in Sarah's explanation, she noted that some of it was counter-trolling. Would I have written anything like that? Absolutely not. But it's not racist for this reason. Don, racism, being racist, is not just prejudice. It's prejudice plus power.
What? Being racist is prejudice plus power. Political power? Financial power? What are you talking about?
Racism, being racist, is not just prejudice. It's prejudice plus power. So one could argue that some of her tweets, even within context, note that she has a prejudice, perhaps, against white men. But that, in fact, does not make her racist. I don't think she's a racist. I absolutely think we're conflating two conversations.
Does it make her a bigot?
No, I don't think it makes her a bigot either.
She's not even a bigot. She's not even a bigot. In fact, she's not even peeved.
I think you have to look at the tweets within the context. Could she be prejudiced? Could she have some not just implicit, but, you know, negative bias towards white men in America due to perhaps what she's experienced throughout her life? Probably. Absolutely. Does that mean, though, that she is, in fact, racist? No, because race is prejudice plus power.
Let me ask you a real simple question. Suppose a cop tweeted this, no matter the race. No matter the sex, how long would he or she have his or her job? Taken out of context, cops are a-holes. How do you take that out of context? Probably, what, do they cut it off? Cops are a-holes, except on Sundays? What? Here's one from 2016, quote, if we're talking big sweeping bans on blank that kills people, why don't we ever, ever, ever talk about banning the police, end of quote. Taken out of context? I'm honestly miserable thinking about what to tell a target of violence. Cops suck, and cops get suckier the more marginalized you are. November 2015. Taken out of context? Well, she might have had a bad experience, and therefore that justifies what she says. But these were, of course, taken out of context because, you see, only somebody who is prejudiced with power can truly be racist, according to this pundit. Simone Sanders on CNN. Have you ever heard anything more absurd? Prejudice plus power. Unbelievable.
I want to talk to you for a moment about a group I've done work with for years, ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. You've seen how your freedom is under attack, but if you act now, you can protect your family today and generations to come. Go to townhallreview.com to find out how you can join Alliance Defending Freedom to help ensure the opponents of freedom don't dictate your future. That's townhallreview.com. Coming up, shootings in Chicago intensify.
Obviously, the accountability is with you. They need to be arrested.
Michael Medved, when the Town Hall Review continues in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Hugh Hewitt. This year alone in the city of Chicago, there have already been well over 300 homicides. The vast majority are from gunshots, about average for the Windy City. Most of the deaths are young black men killed by other young black men. It's become so common it barely makes the news there, much less anywhere in the country. Year after year, these shootings continue. Last weekend was particularly deadly. Salem host Michael Medved looks at the latest.
The Chicago story is one of those things that grabbed me particularly hard because we had covered a demonstration last week that was held by people who were protesting violence in Chicago, and they stopped traffic at Lakeshore Drive and Belmont, and then they marched up to Wrigley Field to try to spoil the fun for Cubs fans. The idea was that people were saying, well, we have so much pain, and we want to reduce violence. And they marched in the north side of Chicago. Why? Because they said, we want to redistribute the pain. Okay, how did that work out? 71 shot, 11 dead in Chicago over the weekend. And it's astonishing. At least 71 people were shot, including 10 fatally, marking a chilling spasm of violence for a city that has struggled with murders and shootings in recent years, even as the national homicide rate hovers near historic lows. And by the way, they say that virtually all of these killings, and perhaps all of them, are gang-related. In fact, here is the statement from Mayor Rahm Emanuel, who obviously is in a world of trouble because of this diabolical crime situation. Here was the mayor trying to explain it.
You can talk about the weather, but the weather didn't pull the trigger. And you can talk about jobs, and they count, but in parts of the city where there aren't jobs, people did not pull the trigger. There are values. There are too many guns on the street, too many people with criminal records on the street, and there is a shortage of values about what is right, what is wrong, what is acceptable, what is condoned, and what is condemned.
Okay, and by the way, Mayor Emanuel can point out, and did, that as terrible as this is, Chicago with more than 300 murders has more than any other American city this year. And with 11 murders and 71 shooting victims over a 60-hour period from Friday at dusk until Monday morning, that's a brief period. You're talking about more than one shooting victim per hour somewhere in the city. It's appalling. And the mayor, Rahm Emanuel, went on to say this.
And we as a city, in every corner, have an accountability and a responsibility. If you know who did this, be a neighbor. Speak up. Neighbors come together. The city will be with you shoulder to shoulder. But this is not about alone, how many police, where were they? The superintendent will take accountability for that. This is not about how many summer jobs, investments. We will do that, and we have more to do, much more to do. But there's something more at stake. And all of us know that this is not Chicago, what we saw. Therefore, all of us who love this city and call it home have a responsibility to heal our neighborhoods.
Okay, this is really not the question, healing our neighborhoods. The question is going after gangs. I'm sorry. There is a series of criminal organizations. And by the way, only they are not predominantly criminal organizations involving illegal immigrants. Some of them are. But regardless of whether they are native born or people who have been in the United States for 300 years, I don't care. The idea of these criminal gangs, one of these shooting victims was 11 years old. This is outrageous. This was the superintendent of police, Eddie Johnson.
You know what I never hear? I hear people holding us accountable all the time. I never hear people saying these individuals out here in the streets need to stop pulling the trigger. I never hear that. I never hear that. They get a pass from everybody, and they shouldn't. They shouldn't. You should be able to gather on your block and have a block club party with not the fear of being gunned down. And it's the same individuals that continuously commit these crimes. Where's the accountability for them?
Okay, obviously the accountability is with you. They need to be arrested. And they talk about 5,000 illegal guns on the streets of Chicago. Okay, they're illegal guns. They're already illegal. Would anyone reasonably oppose some effort by the Chicago police to take the guns out of the hands of criminals who have no right to hold them?
To hear more on Chicago from Michael Medved, go to townhallreview.com. While you're there, take a moment to sign up for the podcast of our program. Never miss an episode. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Coming up.
People were throwing stuff out the window. We look up and there's about 15 to 20 Antifa gang members outside.
Candace Owens describes her terrifying ordeal when the Town Hall Review returns in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review, brought to you in partnership with ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Earlier in the program, we heard a clip from Maxine Waters calling for the harassment of conservatives wherever they go, particularly those tied to President Trump. Whether you find them in a restaurant, department store, or gas station, Waters said, quote, you get out and you create a crowd. The followers have taken that to heart. A number of conservatives have been targeted in their normal everyday life. Most recently, Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk. Candace Owens is the young commentator who became prominent recently after her criticism of Black Lives Matter. Charlie Kirk leads the group Turning Point USA. Owens told her story to Dennis Prager.
So what happened? Where were you? What happened?
So Charlie was in Philadelphia for 24 hours. I actually lived there. And we had a meeting with our graphic design team at 9 a.m. I said to Charlie, hey, I know this great cafe. Let's meet at 8 a.m. and eat there. We get there at 8 a.m. and it wasn't open yet. They were about 5 minutes late to opening. And we're all standing outside. And they opened the doors. And Charlie and our COO, Tyler, we were sat down first. The very first people sat down in the restaurant. And behind us, a group of four people who we saw were dressed in black, but we didn't think of it. It was so early. They had the Antifa decal on them. And they were instantly recognized Charlie first. And they started sneering, like just like looking at each other. And they were on their phones. It's very clear that they were like, is this Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk? You know, they kept looking back. They were sat very far away from us. We were by the window of the restaurant. They were towards the back of the restaurant. And it was just, obviously, we both knew who we were. We knew they were Antifa. They knew who we were. Oh, well, Antifa's allowed to eat in a public space, too. We didn't think anything of it. And that was our first mistake. We underestimated the left. So in that time period, we ordered our food. Our food was served. We were eating it. They must have been on their phones coordinating to have every other Antifa thug member show up to the restaurant. They did not say a single peep during all of this. They didn't snicker at us, nothing. Suddenly, at the window of the restaurant on the outside, people were throwing stuff at the window. We look up, and there's about 15 to 20 Antifa gang members outside, and they are screaming, and they are yelling, and they're throwing stuff at the window. The manager doesn't know what's going on, and I began recording saying, here are the losers Antifa just shut up, because apparently we're not allowed to eat at this restaurant, and at which point, now that they have their thugs in tow, they were emboldened, and the people that were sitting in the restaurant said, get out of here, you effing Nazi.
Okay, I have a few questions. First of all, was it sheer coincidence that they were Antifa
sheer
members?
Sheer coincidence.
I see.
They were genuinely waiting for the restaurant to open as
I see. How did the owners respond?
The owners were shocked. The waitress, you can see in one of the videos, when I turned around and said, after he said, get out, you Nazis, I said, are we not allowed to eat here because we're conservative? And the waitress is horrified. And it was a little blonde girl, and she just had her face, she was holding her face just shocked at what was going on. And the patrons, other patrons of the restaurant actually said to us, these guys are such losers. They must have been conservative, or maybe they weren't. Maybe they just principally just thought, this is insane. These people are sitting here peacefully having breakfast, and now they're causing a ruckus. And then the Antifa members that were outside, one of the men came in and said, they're not Nazis. He wasn't even dining there. He said, they're not Nazis. They're soft fascists. At which point, a black server stops the Antifa member that had walked in and shouted to us that we were soft fascists. The black waiter stood up for us, and he said, you guys are not allowed to do that here. And he started pushing the...
Oh, good. This is very important. So what did they do when he said that? Call him a Nazi?
The guy listened and started going out because he saw that we were walking out. So they were just going to take the party outside. They did not start screaming in the restaurant until we got up. Once we saw that a crowd was gathering at the restaurant, our instincts were pay the check and get the hell out of there, you know? So we literally dropped cash.
All right, why isn't your instinct to sit there and have the restaurant call the police?
Miraculously, that you're right, and we should have probably instantly said call the police, but we just thought, let's get out of here, because we saw them throwing stuff at the window, but, we didn't think that they were going to barricade us, but miraculously, by the time that we got out of the restaurant, there were police officers already there. So they must have saw before we realized that they were starting to assemble outside. There were about, the first police officer I remember seeing were about two or three. By the end of it, there were about 10 police officers.
Do you think that you did the right thing in getting up?
You know, the other options were they were starting to come in. As I said, the guy who said the soft fascist thing, they were starting to come in.
If they do bad things in the restaurant, though, I assume it's a greater felony than screaming epithets outside the restaurant.
But we would have given them more time to assemble. I mean, they were just coming out of the woodwork.
Oh, so you're I know, I get it. Believe me.
Our fear was being barricaded then, like, they get more violence because they had bullhorns. I mean, this was a coordinated effort.
No, it's horrific. I mean, it's a terrible situation. I saw the video, and it's five times worse being there. Then something was thrown on Charlie.
They threw eggs. And they threw, the eggs missed him, and then they threw water, which hit him. And they started cheering and were very excited. And at that point, the police officers built a wall. It was literally a wall of Black and Spanish men protecting us, and their backs faced to us and their fronts faced to the violent gang members.
Incidentally, calling you a Nazi, I just wonder, because I know a great deal about Nazism. I don't recall there ever being a Black Nazi.
No, there aren't any. They were acting like the brown shirts, though.
Yes, absolutely. Were any of them arrested?
No. So the police officer conducted themselves with such professional nature. They came to us immediately and said, do you want to press charges? And Charlie said no. And his reason for that was two things. He said he didn't want to martyr them to make them think, oh, I got arrested for fighting. You know, that's what they want. You know, they want to think that they're a martyr for some cause. These kids look like they're young. They've got to be from 18 to 21. I picture it being, because it's obviously funded, people that didn't go to college making $20 an hour. I've heard they make $20 an hour, Antifa protesters. And it's the perfect market. They're uneducated, and they're young. These were not 30-year-olds, you know? The number one thing, and I say this seriously, they all look like they don't shower. For weeks, like it's a symbol, and that's why we recognize them. They're very greasy and very dirty. It's a part of their Antifa culture. It's not to shower, not to clean. It's I guess them saying, you know, sticking it to society that they're not going to get in line. But that is something that is remarkable that you notice across the board is that they are.
Well, let's be honest. BO is an effective weapon. I mean, let's be honest here.
Yeah, I know. When they were, and they, remember, they had bullhorns and were screaming in my face.
I know. So here is a scene of a white using a bullhorn at a Black woman being protected by Black and Hispanic policemen, but they are the progressives. You're the racist. This is the world of the left. This is the world of the Democratic Party. People need to understand this. This is mainstream Democrat today. Now,
Democrat politician has condemned
it. Exactly correct.
I want to talk to you for a moment about a group I've done work with for years, ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. You've seen how your freedom is under attack, but if you act now, you can protect your family today and generations to come. Go to townhallreview.com to find out how you can join Alliance Defending Freedom to help ensure the opponents of freedom don't dictate your future. That's townhallreview.com. Coming up, in one country, many men prefer dolls to wives.
This is incredibly pathetic.
Michael Medved with the disturbing details with the final segment of the Town Hall Review in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Hugh Hewitt. In the United States, we generally understand the value of family. Even with unwed birth rates high and with people choosing to wait longer before they marry, the average citizen still values the traditional family and still hopes for the family ideal for himself or herself. Other countries, not so fortunate. And in some, the trend is downright bizarre. Michael Medved highlights one particular situation overseas.
One of the key elements in an American turnaround is the strength of family and getting family right. And raising children in a traditional way and making sure that we have a growing population, frankly, is absolutely crucial to a growing economy. And one example of that would be some of the economic challenges that Japan has been facing, for 30 years, have to do with the birth rate, which is incredibly low. Well, there is now a piece in the UK, in the Daily Star, which, okay, it's a tabloid. It's not one of the prestige papers in the United Kingdom. But the headline is, Sex Robot Time Bomb, Japanese Will Go Extinct as Dolls Beat Living Competition. Now, people have known for a while that there is this special Japanese fascination with producing and apparently consuming sex robots. But what this article says is a demographic countdown clock made by researchers at Tokyo University has predicted the exact year when Japan's dwindling population will shrink to none. Year-on-year reductions in fertility rates paired with an aging population has created a demographic time bomb. The doomsday clock, developed by economists Hiroshi Yoshida and Masahiro Ishigaki, says Japanese will appear from planet Earth by 3,546. Okay, that's 1,500 years from now. Don't get worried. But they say that every year there are fewer children. And this is a problem, particularly if you want to sustain things like Social Security and pensions. And the drop in the total number of children in Japan was 177,000 people, children, from last year. The efforts of Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe to combat this low birth rate appears to be failing. Some experts have pointed the finger at silicon love dolls and lifelike robots that women and men in Japan are replacing with real people. And then they have all these testimonials about how guys in particular, though women apparently are buying some sex robots too, they cost about $6,000 each. And a number of guys said there are fewer problems than with your wife. This is incredibly pathetic.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Town Hall Review. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin and producers Charlie Richards, David Posian, Michael Cook, Adam Ramsey, and Dwayne Patterson. And let me express our appreciation again to our sponsors, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.